Blog Talk Radio.
Francil.com, speak my soul. Good morning, friends. It's Blog Talk Radio, The Cosmic Citizen, with Paula Thompson and Crystalline B. Larson, my dear friend and co-host. And Crystalline may not be on with us the whole time today, but I know she's very honored because today we have a special guest, someone very dear to her heart, her very own father, Dr. Richard Duke. So, Crystalline, are you with us today?
I'm here. Happy Saturday morning.
Yeah. Sorry, you're feeling a bit under the weather, darling. I hope
much
better.
No problem.
Yeah. But you
ironic, since we're doing on
today.
A show on health.
Yeah, and I can't imagine, you know, I folks, if you've read the bio that we have for Richard, you know that he's highly experienced in medicine, and he has some very interesting ideas, and I say they're unorthodox, or he's come to some new conclusions about Western medicine, and of course you're not alone in this, are you, Richard? Are you with us, Richard?
Yes, it's something going to come sooner or later because the facts are there, even though the establishment is not willing to face them. And I stumbled on a very effective way to help people become happy, healthy, and satisfied simply by doing the opposite of what doctors do.
Why don't you start with a little bit, Dad, about your background in medicine, how you decided to become a doctor and where you started working?
Well, when I was a sophomore in college intending to be an English and drama teacher, I had this sudden feeling of restlessness that wasn't good enough. I should do something more useful. And thinking about Albert Schweitzer, I thought, well, maybe the most useful thing I could be is a doctor who practices where they don't have a doctor. And I was commissioned as a missionary in the United Church of Christ and was going to be a doctor where there really needed to be a doctor. I ended up in Ghana, West Africa, for 11 years and thought that was going to be my life's work. But I was keeping track of the deaths that occurred and realized year after year we had the same number of deaths from the same causes. I knew I was saving a lot of lives with emergency surgery and treating infections and things like that. So I must have been doing harm unknowingly because the death rate the total death rate did not go down. And then I studied public health and epidemiology and found that medical and surgical diagnosis and treatment have never improved the health of any population anywhere in the world. And this was really devastating discovery.
What was that?
In fact,
it was
whenever doctors... Yes?
I missed that. You said it was a real what discovery?
It was an agonizing discovery.
Devastating.
I didn't know what to do or how to do it. I went into public health administration, and for several years I was able to do a lot of good by bringing down the death rates and disease rates in populations. But it became politically incorrect to do that. And it was hard for me to find work. I'd get a job, and then I would find out that because I wasn't politically correct, they had to find some way to get rid of me. So it's been a hard track. And when I was practicing public health administration on the side, when we finally had to have liability insurance, public health doctors could never get that insurance, but Wisconsin passed a law that every physician had the insurance. And so for the first time as a public health physician, I had liability insurance. I began making home visits on the side in my free time. And as I said before, I tried to do the opposite of what other doctors do. Instead of having patients come to me, I would go to them and be on their turf and under their control. And I would tell them, you are the world's greatest expert on your own life and health. And you have a tremendous potential that you can discover and use not only for your good, but for the good of the whole universe. And that this potential that you have is infinite and eternal. And in this life, we can barely scratch the surface of this tremendous potential. And I asked them to make a list of the good influences in their life. Don't talk about what's wrong or what you were complaining about and what you don't like. Make a list of the things you do like and try to take maximum advantage of every one of the good influences that are immediately available to you. And nobody had ever made a list of these things. You've heard about people counting their blessings, but I tried to formalize it, to write down the things that have done you the most good so far in your life and try to take full advantage of them. And until you begin complaining and looking for cures and ways out of situation, first make the best use of what you already have. And sometimes that's all you have to do. But if that doesn't work, then you focus on your number one concern at the moment and allow your inner still small voice to make suggestions about the most promising next step to take regarding whatever your concern is. Everybody was able to do this, even people who thought it was foolish, they were able to do it. And everyone got better. They made themselves better. Either the first step they took worked and they had the benefit, or when it didn't work, that was even better because as soon as they realized it wasn't working, in every case they knew exactly what they should have done instead. And when they did that, the benefit was so great, it blew them away. They just said it's too good to be true. They had trouble believing it. But after about 6 months, they realized it really was true. And they could hardly wait to take the next step to see what was going to happen next, whether it was pleasant or unpleasant to start with, because in the end, it always turned out to be great. And after I'd been doing this for about 3 years, yes?
Oh, my. I wanted to make
after
an announcement. Before we go too much farther, we have two callers. Diane
okay.
McGrath is going to joining us from Italy. You know, Diane, you went to the United Eurasia Family Festival. She has been at a GUNA conference in Italy. We were supposed to have her on last week, but because of flight problems to Milan, she wasn't able to join the show, which was a great disappointment. She has been in Italy for a week now. And, of course, I don't know if you know this about Diane, but she also has studied alternative medicine for quite a while and gone a different path than you have gone. But I think it'll be interesting for you two to compare notes. So she said she'd call in when she's at the GUNA conference. That's G-U-N-A. I'll let her tell you guys what it means. I think she's on the line, and we also have another caller. So if you want to hang with us here for a second, I will put them both on. Diane, is this you?
Hello, this is
Erica
Lanice.
I'm sorry, what?
Lanice. This is Lanice.
Oh, hi.
I'm calling to listen to the show. Hello.
Okay, did you have a question for Dr. B?
Well, my interest is with yeast infections. What would he recommend? What's the most beneficial alternative treatment for that?
Well, I no longer diagnose and treat illness. What I do is I help people to discover on their own what is going to be best for them.
Okay.
And if it's not an emergency, which should be handled by regular medicine and surgery. If you have a really serious emergency, there's nothing better than traditional medicine and surgery. But if it's not an emergency, it's not anything urgent like a yeast infection, I would not even address that. I would look at the positives and have you discover the most promising next step you could take. Now, if you're trying to find out what to do about a yeast infection, and that's your number one concern, you will be able to find the most promising next step to take from your own still small voice. It works for whatever your concern is at the moment. It seems to be the best way to discover and develop your own unique, infinite, eternal potential. Would include
Can you give us an example of this? Is it an exercise that you do, a meditation you do?
No. I've already described it. The person simply goes inward, focusing on their number one concern, and they will receive suggestions from their inner voice. It's very important not to think. You just become a receptor. And you will receive suggestions. And what I did was, when they came, got up a suggestion, I'd ask them to say a word or two out loud, and I'd make a list of them. Some people came up with 30 or 40 suggestions. Others would have trouble getting even five. I tried to use five as a minimum because, on average, about 1 out of 10 of the suggestions they receive are really extraordinary suggestions. And if they get five, they've got a 50% chance of getting a really good one.
Okay. And then you kind of, do you go over the list with them or and just see what insights they get from that? Or, I mean,
no.
For instance, if they were by
themselves? All I do is act as the passive participant in the process. I pray for them. I hope that they will get what they need, whatever they need, and so far it has worked.
Wow.
When people who had absolutely no self-confidence at all and were miserable, once they discovered that they could find out what they need from inside themselves, they could hardly wait to see what was going to happen next. Their confidence suddenly soared. It was unbelievable. People had been living a miserable life in the gutter for years and years. They were suddenly happy, healthy, and very satisfied with their new life. It's like being born again, I guess you could say.
Do you ever recommend like supplements or anything like that in terms of treatment or conjunction?
I subscribe to two newsletters that are very helpful in that regard. One is called Nutrition and Healing by Dr. Jonathan V. Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, Nutrition and Healing. And the other one is Health Alert from Dr. Bruce West, W-E-S-T. So Nutrition and Healing and Health Alert, if you subscribe to those, you will be able to handle almost anything that comes along. Dr. West has a protocol for healing hearts and for healing in general. And if you're a subscriber, you can get his protocols. And I do use those. A lot of what Dr. West recommends in his protocol is our products from Standard Process, standardprocess.com. Anybody who is a health professional of any kind can order from Standard Process. They stopped selling to the general public because they got in trouble with the Food and Drug Administration. And they make raw, whole, organic food concentrates, which are just like eating the live, raw plant and animal.
Okay, we have another caller. I'm going to put the other caller through. Hold on.
Okay.
Area code 937, you're on Blog Talk.
Well, hi, my name's Maria, and I'm calling from Yellow Springs, Ohio. And I actually don't normally call.
Hi, Maria.
Hi, I listen to the show quite often on my phone, and it automatically cues me in to talk. I didn't really call to talk, but it just so happens that I'm actually definitely into the health food thing. I've been working in health food stores since 1987, so like I just happened to tune in. I didn't even know what the show was about, and I heard you talking to the last lady there, and I personally have found that same tuning in and listening to that voice and asking myself what should I do, what's next in my health quest on my own. And I believe what you're saying. I know that works. I know from real personal experience that it works.
Yes, and I say
and
one
on
plus
another,
one
the,
equals...
The Urantia book definitely left me completely renewed of spirit and born again. So those two things combined in my life now are even more powerful than ever, you know, as far as ability
well,
I say
one plus one equals 11. You can do a lot by yourself, but when you're doing something in close cooperation with another human being, it's about 11 times more effective than just doing it on your own. And I think that's one of the secrets I discovered by making home visits and helping people find their own way.
Powerful stuff. I love it.
So you can,
well,
you can
really,
always find
really
the most promising next step to take.
Yeah, it's encouraging stuff. Beautiful. I mean, I would say to anybody, go in the health food store and try the natural approach. If it's not an emergency, then, you know, you can certainly listen to your own voice and try to guide yourself through progress and health on your own. And everybody knows the things they can do on their own to improve their diet. We know now. We're learning more and more about the simple things, the raw food, and incorporating that as much as possible into any diet of any kind, you know. So, but it's a beautiful thing you're doing, so thank you. I'm just going to continue listening, and thank you, Cosmic Radio folks. And I tune in often by phone, and it ends up cueing me in. But you guys continue and keep on doing it. Bless you all so much. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, take care. One love.
Another thing I might mention is good calories, bad calories. This was published,
good
I think, calories, around 2007.
Calories.
Yes? Hello?
Yeah, you're still...
So tell us more about the good calories, bad calories idea.
This book, Good Calories, Bad Calories, is it blows everybody's mind about nutrition. Essentially what this man discovered by looking at the real evidence and justifying step by step how he reached all of his conclusions, and nobody has been able to shoot him down. They're just ignoring him because he's ruining the business for almost everybody in the health and nutrition field. But he came to the conclusion that if you avoid starch or processed foods, anything you find in a package, and you eat organic plants and animals and eat only natural food, you can eat all the fat you want and you will not gain weight if it's natural fat that is in nature. It's not necessarily vegetable oils, which are processed foods. If you eat the whole vegetable, the whole fruit, and you eat food that would be like the same as wild animals, that you can eat all you want. If you don't eat starch, you don't eat sugar, you don't eat high fructose corn syrup, you can eat all the calories you want and you will not get fat.
One of our listeners might be someplace where there's wind or noise going by, and it's interfering with our being able to hear our guests. So maybe you can put your phone on mute.
Well, I can put it on mute. Is that better?
Much better, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, caller. But I know you just wanted to listen, so I hope you hang in here with us. That's kind of what, essentially what Dr. Atkins was saying too, wasn't it, Richard? That
well, it's not quite the same, but it's close.
It's close.
If you get a copy of Good Calories, Bad Calories, you can get it on Amazon.com, a used copy for pennies. It's certainly worth having, but it essentially is you avoid starch and root vegetables that have a lot of starch, like potatoes, and you avoid sugar, sucrose, table sugar, and you avoid high fructose corn syrup, and you try to eat the most natural organic food that's available. I've had a little bit of heart trouble, a rapid heartbeat, and found that I had a little bit of cholesterol deposited in my coronary arteries. And so I decided to go on this diet that he recommended to avoid starch and sugar. And I don't have to lose weight, but I started losing weight. And I was getting too thin. So I ate as much fat as I could, and it was hard for me to keep from losing weight.
Wow. Well, I'm just going to have to buy that book.
Yeah, just avoid starch and sugar and high fructose corn syrup, and that will do
it. It's not something that I didn't know, that you know, these things, carbs, what we call carbs, and foods that are high in carbs and simple sugars that are real easy to digest or what the culprit is. I mean, your body will use those first for energy, and if it doesn't need them, then it will store them as fat. And, you know,
right.
I mean, makes perfect sense to me. It's just really hard to avoid those foods that have, because there's so many of them. I mean, it's bread, it's corn chips, it's not just candy or cake,
right?
As we know,
if you eat starch and sugar, if you eat starch and sugar, you get hungry. If you don't eat starch and sugar, you do not get hungry. You can go for a day or more without, and you may have to take time out to eat because you forget to eat. You don't get hungry.
Right.
Starch and sugar make you hungry, and they make you produce more insulin. And
for our caller, they can really make yeast go crazy, right?
Yes. If you produces more insulin in your blood, all of your hormones are going to go out of whack. A lot of insulin in the blood will mess up everything in your body. And you can avoid insulin entirely if you don't eat refined carbohydrates. And high fructose corn syrup is bad because the fructose goes to the liver. The liver is the only part of the body that can handle fructose. And when you, if you eat the whole fruit, the liver doesn't have any problem. But when you eat just plain fructose, like in high fructose corn syrup, the liver is overwhelmed. It just cannot handle it. And the liver is the kitchen of the body. Every food has to go to the liver to get metabolized so that the body can use it. And when the liver isn't working right, then everything goes wrong.
A weight specialist told me once that most overweight people can't manage more than 60 grams of carbs a day. And that's not very many. If you look at the average cereal box, one bowl of cereal has, what, 40 grams of carbs? Which would leave you
well,
only
carbohydrates by themselves aren't bad. It's only the refined carbohydrates. If you eat whole vegetables and whole fruit, there's a lot of carbohydrates there, but they're not harmful.
Right, right. And that's the difference.
Grains in general are hard to process. Whole grains are a little better, but still, if you can avoid grains entirely, you probably have no trouble losing weight, unless you're eating a lot of sugar.
Avoid grains entirely. See, now that's not
yeah.
something that Western medicine would agree with at all.
Well, of course.
In
I
fact,
said this book, Good Calories, Bad Calories, is anathema. The regular medicine and nutrition people just hate the book. And they can't refute it because the logic is perfect. So they try to ignore it. Almost nobody knows about it.
How did you find it?
By accident. I saw a reference to it someplace, and I looked it up, and I went to Amazon.com and found I could get it for a few pennies, and I ordered the book, and it blew me away. I couldn't believe it. And I began reading at the beginning of the book, and the whole first part of the book, almost all the book, is just his thought process, what he went through step by step, and I didn't get very far before I realized this guy is right on the money. He's looking only for solid evidence, and he's finding it, and he's drawing his conclusions. And anybody, any scientist that reads the book cannot refute it. It is perfectly clear, sensible, and logical. So because it
would
put practically everybody in the health and nutrition field out of work, they're ignoring it.
So really, with the advent of processed foods, foods that are made in a factory, highly processed, packaged, full of preservatives so that they have a long shelf life, the things that are readily available in your neighborhood 7-Eleven, these are the things that are killing us, really. I mean,
right.
if we go back 100 years and live on the farm and grow our food and it was fresh and natural, and sure, we made bread, but you didn't have bread constantly. You didn't have baked goods constantly. They were a treat more, you know, something you did, you know, on occasion. You worked hard, you ate, you drank fresh, clean water, you ate wholesome food that was grown locally for the most part.
And they
and
ate, they
when
ate
I got,
a lot of fat. They ate a lot of fat.
Right.
Natural fat.
When,
yeah.
when I got
not
cancer
the vegetable
in 1991, I read a book by Michio Kushi, which was about macrobiotics. And macrobiotics is essentially a lot about eating locally grown foods, balanced foods, healthy foods, just what you're saying, this book, Good Calories, Bad Calories is about, and restoring the body's balance. It's like, you know, what he says is that we've gotten out of balance. And what he puts forward, and I think it's so interesting, and I've thought about it for a long, long time because I almost died at 36 from a tumor that exploded in my body and I almost bled to death. What he says is that cancer was so rare at the turn of the century, at the turn of the 20th century, that doctors would come from miles around just to see a case of it. He said by the end of that century, it would be so common that two out of every three people would have had it at some time in their life. And he said that it was the advent of processed, industrialized food that has done this to us, and that we
you could say almost everything in a package is bad for you.
That's shocking, really, because we eat so much of that. So Richard, give us an example of a day, like what you know. Obviously, you get up and you cut some fresh fruit, right?
Yeah, get fruit and berries. About the only fresh vegetable that I get is yams or sweet potatoes, even though it has some carbohydrates in there. It's a very nutritious food. I don't eat a lot of the sweet potatoes, but most of the vegetables I eat are frozen. And I try to get organic ones if I can. I eat some that are not organic, but I eat them with just barely heating, steaming them just slightly. I suppose I could eat the frozen vegetables raw, which would be even better. But my health is definitely improving, and almost everything I eat is just steamed slightly. I don't cook it till it's well done, but just it makes it a little bit easier to eat if it's steamed slightly. And that it probably retains most of the nutrients it should have. And I take these whole raw organic food concentrates from Standard Process to supplement my diet.
From what again did you say?
Standard Process whole raw organic food concentrates. It's like eating the raw plant and animal in effect, and it's concentrated nutrition. It makes it convenient for most of us to find safe raw plants and animals to eat is difficult, but
maybe
you
could also share. Maybe you could also share with our audience how you were able to heal your heart. What happened with that?
Yes, back in the 1990s, I had three leaking heart valves and had congestive heart failure. I had fluid accumulating in my legs. I could not walk upstairs. I couldn't walk uphill. And they said that I would probably have to have a heart transplant.
I took
the prescription drugs and I got worse. And so I started taking vitamins and minerals from the grocery store and trying to eat the healthiest foods I could. And I got a little bit better. Then when I moved from St. Louis to Madison, we met a woman in the Mormon church who converted my wife to Mormonism. And she was selling these Chinese herbs from Sunrider. And so I started taking those, and I got much better. And when I found the Standard Process raw whole food organic concentrates, I got completely better. My leaking heart valves became normal. My blood pressure, my cholesterol, my weight, everything, my heart feet became regular. I took a lot of iodine. We were exposed to a lot of chlorine and fluorine, and the Food and Drug Administration stopped using iodine to sterilize food equipment. They switched to bromine. So we're loaded with chlorine, bromine, and fluorine, which oppose iodine. So we all probably need to take a lot more iodine to be healthy. And I took 52 milligrams of iodine a day for 9 months before my heartbeat became regular. And I still
wow.
have one heart valve that is leaking slightly, and I'm taking a recommendation by Dr. Bruce West's protocol that if I take this supplement for 2 years, I'll probably be able to heal that third heart valve that's still leaking a bit. And I can run uphill. I can go up 3 steps at a time on the stairs. I mean, my heart is in better shape now than it's been since I was 40 years old.
Now, can you tell us, how old are you now, Richard?
I'm 59. I mean, I'm 79.
You're 79.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry I didn't hear you clearly the first time, or I just didn't have a chance to write it down. You follow two doctors, Dr. Jonathan Wright. What's the other doctor's name, Dr. West?
Bruce West.
Bruce, okay.
And Dr. Wright's publication is called Nutrition and Healing.
And that's
and
a
Dr.
free online newsletter?
That's a newsletter. Mm-hmm.
It's not free. He does charge an annual fee to get his newsletter.
Yes.
Oh, he does. Okay.
Annual and Health Alert by Dr. Bruce West. That's another newsletter. And if you're a
okay.
subscriber, you can go online and get information from Dr. West's, Dr. Wright's library online. And if you are a regular subscriber to Health Alert, you will eventually get Dr. West's protocol. One protocol for heart and the other protocol for health in general. And he uses a lot of standard process supplements. And he has other things you can do, like a liver flush or various slow burn exercise. And if you send him a self-addressed envelope with 2 stamps, he'll mail back to you the things that are not in his newsletter. And also, if you follow Dr. Bruce West's protocols and they don't work, you can send him a letter and tell him what you did and what's happening, and he will tell you what to try next and doesn't even charge you for it.
Wow.
And you've known about him for quite a long time and have been following his protocols for several years, if I recall.
Well, I found his protocols, I think, in 2003. It's not too long a time, but that's made a big difference. I was in extremely bad shape in 1999. I got a little better by 2003, but I got much better now since then with Dr. Bruce West's protocols.
Wow.
And maybe you can talk a little bit about some of the specific things that they have available, like the Congaplex and ways to really fight viruses and colds and those kinds of things when they happen.
Well, actually, for a virus, I read recently, and I pretty well demonstrated to myself and others, if you take 100,000 international units of natural vitamin A, which is mostly natural beta-carotene, You don't want to take huge doses of retinol. And if you ask, you know, what the medical profession, what is vitamin A, they'll say it's retinol. Well, that is an active ingredient in the vitamin A complex, but it's not the whole thing. Every vitamin has a complex. And we know, we don't have any idea. There are probably thousands of parts to every vitamin complex, and we know only a few. But if you get it right from nature, natural sources of vitamin A will have all the parts of the complex. And if you
what would be a natural source of vitamin A?
Well, cold water fish, carrots. Right? There are quite a few sources that have some, but those are the major ones, carrots and fish. But if you take 100,000 units of natural vitamin A, mostly beta-carotene, four times a day with food, you can cure any virus.
Well,
it seems to be true. If you're coming down with a cold or a flu and you take 100,000 units of vitamin A three or four times a day with food, you in a day or two, your virus will be gone. You'll be free of it. Standard process makes something. What?
What was that, Paula?
From taking vitamin A. Yeah. You can rid yourself of a virus by taking vitamin A? Is that what you're saying?
If you take the whole vitamin A complex, natural vitamin A, which is mostly beta-carotene, and you can buy vitamin A and beta-carotene that's synthetic. They can make it from other chemicals. Be sure it's natural and that you're getting the whole vitamin A complex, which is unknown. But if it's a natural source, it will probably have everything in it.
Now, you take
you
the
wouldn't
raw
want
organic.
To take
you. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah,
I'm
from
sorry.
An organic source, right. And you wouldn't want to
take
that much vitamin A
on a regular basis.
I'm sorry? What did
you
say?
I was just asking if you can purchase the concentrates, the raw organic food concentrates?
Not the general public, but anybody who has a health, is in the health profession, they can register at standardprocess.com and they can purchase it. And they can give it to anybody they want. The reason Standard Process does this is they don't want the federal government to bother them. So they sell their products to health professionals, and the health professionals decide how it's going to be used. And if they get in trouble, the health professional gets in trouble, not Standard Process. But if you're a nurse, if you're a nutritionist, if you're a physician, you can order this from Standard Process online. Now,
okay.
if the health food store wanted to sell Standard Process, they could do that if they have a health professional that makes the purchase, and the health professional will be taking the legal responsibility of what happens to the product. That's okay. I don't know of any health food store that sells Standard Process.
Oh, okay.
And if you're a health professional,
you can
get everything at half price, and if you sell it at the retail price, you make a 50% profit.
Okay. Crystal and I have Diane on the other line, and apparently she's having a hard time getting through, and I need to talk to her for a minute to see what the problem is. But
go ahead.
Go right ahead and take it away. I know you have some questions, and I have a lot of questions, Richard. So you know, that things that I would love to know about, like, you know, your concepts on why you believe medicine has become so politicized and how it got there. But, Christy, if you want to take it for a minute, and I'll be back in just a sec.
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you,
Dawn. I was going to ask the same thing. Why do you think medicine has gotten so political? And what I guess what I'd like to hear is, when did this start happening to medicine, and how did this historical aspect of physician start to change, or
well,
start to
I don't
go
think,
down the?
I don't think medicine ever did more good than harm, but it before 1921. Medicine just did a small amount of harm. It began doing really bad harm in 1921. I think in general, all advice is harmful. If you get good advice and you follow it, you become dependent on the advisor, and that's not good, to be dependent on somebody else for the rest of your life. If you get
so
bad advice,
you're going...
eliminate
the middleman?
What eliminates the middleman?
I'm saying your process would eliminate the middleman by basically going within to try to determine
right. I don't do anything except encourage people to find their way. If I give advice, I'll be doing harm. Either I make people dependent or I make them angry. If the advice is good, they become dependent. If the advice is bad, they'll be angry, especially if they put time and money and effort into following the advice. So I think advice is never a good thing to give people. Give people information, give them facts. In an emergency, you don't bother with advice. You just do what has to be done to save a life. You don't get permission, you don't explain the pros and cons of what you're going to do, because by the time you explain it, the person will be dead. So you in a real emergency, you just do what you have to do without getting permission from the patient, except, well, the patient can refuse treatment, that's true. But once they start treatment, the doctor is going to do what is necessary to save life, and doctors are excellent at doing this. In the Korean War, when they had the first MASH units close to the front lines, they saved 75% of the deaths and disabilities that were prevented by surgery they could perform within 30 minutes to an hour. And if you get to an emergency room and you're alive, and you have a severe emergency, 95% of the time they can save your life.
And so what was the process, you think, that happened in 1921 that changed the way medicine was being done?
Well, Abraham Flexner had done a study of colleges and universities in North America and recommended improvements in education, in higher education. And Andrew Carnegie, the Carnegie Foundation, was really impressed with what Abraham Flexner did with the universities, and he said, I want you to do the same with the medical schools. So Flexner started looking at all the medical schools in Canada and the United States, and he was just horrified at how far behind the times they were. They were doing things and teaching things that were completely wrong. And he recommended that they try to use modern science, not to diagnose and treat, but to prevent disease, to keep people healthy. Well, almost all the medical schools in United States and Canada were shut down in disgrace after he wrote his book or his report in 1911. And it took about 10 years for the face of medicine to change and become scientific. The medical faculties that survived the shutdown said, well, we're not going to teach prevention. That'll put doctors out of work. But we have to be scientific. How can we be scientific? Well, why don't we make diagnosis more scientific? Let's establish scientific criteria for as many diagnoses as possible. Let's establish scientific treatment of choice, finding the prescription drug or the surgery that will get the best result. And we can do double-blind crossover experiments that are very scientific to find the best prescription drug and the best surgery to do for every scientific diagnosis. Well, once they started doing this, the public was just overjoyed. They thronged to the doctor's offices. And the major change occurred about 1921. Between 1900 and 1921, we gained 13.5 years of life. Every 1.6 days, we lived a day longer till we reached 60.8 years of life. Average age at death in 1921 was 60.8 years. And then, because millions of more people were going to see their doctor, over the next 5 years, we lost 4.1 years of life. Because
wow.
People were seeing the doctor. And when the increase in doctor visits began to level off, by 1926, we started to live longer again, but it took 2.6 days to live a day longer. It took 60% longer to live a day longer. And that was because people were getting scientific diagnosis and treatment. But that continued until 1961. From 1926 to 1961, every 2.6 days we lived a day longer, right through the Great Depression, showing that income is not important to length of life, and during World War II. But in 1961 until 1968, we did not live one day longer.
And really, that was when we started having some significant changes in lifestyle. And when you look at...
it had nothing to do with lifestyle. That was when there was a push for socialized medicine. And the doctors, AMA and the private doctors, did not want socialized medicine. They said, send us your poor, send us your elderly. We'll take care of them at no charge if they can't pay. So millions more got medical and surgical diagnosis and treatment. And then in 1965, Medicare and Medicaid were passed anyway. And again, for several years, there were more doctor's visits than ever before.
Well, but also during that same time frame, it became very fashionable to smoke cigarettes and also to drink alcohol to excess.
But that
was happening right at the same time.
Alcohol, the deaths from cigarettes and alcohol are few compared to the deaths from health care. We have about 1 million people dying every year simply because they walked into a doctor's office or were admitted to a hospital.
Now
If they had not seen the doctor and they had not been in the hospital.
Blows my mind. Statement absolutely blows my mind, because what you're saying essentially is that doctors are killing people. And
absolutely.
Coming from a doctor,
every five doctors, every year, every five doctors kill seven people.
Wow.
It's about one out of 1,100 visits.
I happen to agree with you. I think that Western medicine, I had a guy tell me you know, it really was Western medicine that almost killed me, because I went with a pain in my left side, and they called it just a functional cyst, and just that functional cyst exploded, and I almost bled to death. I was on a road trip when this happened because they misdiagnosed me. I mean, they didn't bother to do any tests on it. They really just made a blind diagnosis that was absolutely wrong. So I agree with you that doctors, you know, aren't necessarily really doing people a good turn. But
well,
I had a guy after
people,
after that happened to me, I went on my own journey of healing, and I did exactly what you say. I really got in touch
right.
with myself and my body, and I found a cure. I found my own health. I found it. I took responsibility for my health. I took back my responsibility from doctors, and I said, I'm the only one that can make the changes necessary for me to heal. And I did that. And
right.
in this journey, I met a holistic doctor. And he said something to me that I'll never forget. And it's just what you're saying. He said, if you were to be in a traumatic accident and lose a limb, for instance, or you know, be hurt seriously bad, like men do get in combat, he said, you couldn't be in better hands than in modern Western doctors and nurses. They could literally take
right.
you apart and put you back together again. He said, but if you have a chronic condition, like our caller with candida, or like, you know, any diabetes or heart condition or whatever, if you have a chronic disease, he said, they don't have a clue. That was his word.
Right.
They don't have a clue.
Well, you are the world's greatest expert on your own life and health. And that's true for virtually everyone.
So, you know, and I've learned from this journey that I took, this healing journey that I took, that the body does tell its own story. And it tells its own story in many ways. There's you know, simple things that people can do, like kinesiology, that you can tell, the body will tell you if this substance weakens it or strengthens it, like with a supplement you want to take or you're thinking about taking. There's simple things you can do, and even just like you said, ask yourself inwardly, is this good for me? And listen intently for the answer, for your body will tell you. Hold it in your hand and ask, or, You know, I had a chiropractor that did kinesiology on me, and he put the supplement in my hand and then test my strength, my muscle. You know, he'd do a simple muscle resistance test to test my strength with this particular supplement in my hand. And
if you're asking your inner voice for a yes or no answer, that is not completely reliable. But if you ask your inner voice for suggestions, and you receive, you just receive several suggestions, the more the merrier. You, no matter how many you receive, you will know immediately when you look at the list, you'll know immediately which one is most promising. And that is far more reliable than a yes or no answer.
You know, another thing that occurs to me is, and I know a lot of people have to take drugs. I know they do. You know, if they're diabetics or whatever, that, you know, that literally some people's lives are saved by pharmaceuticals. But
in emergencies,
but for the most part,
but there is no pharmaceutical. There's no pharmaceutical that no synthetic drug that is good to take for a long time. Synthetic drugs are great in emergencies. They're very powerful. They'll act instantly. But there is no synthetic drug that is good to take on an ongoing basis. They all do more harm than good.
Now, why is that so?
Well, I was in charge of a nursing home, the Wisconsin Veterans Home, which is a state institution, not a federal one, for 11 months. And I was emptying the beds by cutting back on their prescription drugs. They all thought the drugs were keeping them alive, And I got the pharmacist to put their drug in a blue capsule and put milk sugar in the other capsule and have them take one for a week and then switch to the other for a week. In every case, either they couldn't tell the difference or they thought that the placebo was the effective drug. So I was getting them off their medicine, and they all were getting better, and they were emptying out the beds. So they had to start rumors, horrible rumors about me, until the public outcry. They were forced to fire me because of the public anger at me. And they got another doctor who put them all back on their prescription drugs and filled up the beds, and they were happy again, because in Waupaca County, in Veterans Home, hiring nurses is the number one employer in the county.
Okay, well, here's another true story, and it plays off of what you just said, and you were speaking dear to my heart. I do not like prescription drugs. It bugs me really bad that we have prescription drug commercials on television. I think they should be outlawed. I don't think people should walk into their doctor and tell them, hey, I want to try this drug. I just think the power of suggestion is too strong. If you suggest a drug to somebody, if you suggest a problem to somebody, they're probably going to end up with that problem. It's just there's I have huge issues with prescription drugs, but I had a video store for years, and I had a customer who used to come in on a regular basis. His name was Colby, and Colby was only in his 30s. He had a whole series of illnesses, and just Colby was never, ever well. And one day, you know, he hadn't been in for a while. He came in my store, and he looked like a new person. He looked like a different person. And it was so striking that I said, and even his countenance, the way he spoke, everything about him was different. He seemed well to me. He seemed healthy and well for the first time ever. And I said to him, I said, wow, Colby, what are you doing? You seem so happy and well. He said, well, he said, my health reached a crisis point. I ended up in the hospital on IV, intravenous medicine. He said, I had multiple diagnoses from different doctors. I had liver problems, kidney problems. Everybody had me on a problem. I was on all kinds of drugs. He said, I had a doctor walk in my room. I was hooked up to these IVs, and I was laying in the hospital bed, and this doctor walked into my room, and he said, Colby, you are not sick. I have people in this hospital that really are sick, and they really need my help, but you are not sick. You need to get out of here. And he said, I got so mad, I ripped out my IVs and walked out of that hospital that moment. He said, I went home. He said, I was so furious at this doctor. I went home. I opened up my medicine cabinet. He said, I got a big empty jar that my wife had been saving, and I opened it up, and I started dumping all my prescription medicines in this jar. It was like a big jar, like a big pickle jar. And he said, by the time I was done, I had completely filled this jar with prescription medicines. And he said, I took them out in a very ritualistic way. I took them outside and dumped them all in the trash. And he said, I stopped every form of prescription drug at that moment. I didn't take any more. He said, I did nothing but get better after that. He said, and now it's been several weeks. I've never felt so good. And he said, I'm off all prescriptions. That story alone will stay with me forever. Because whoever that doctor was that walked into that room and told them, you are not sick, realized that this poor guy had been victimized by doctors and drug companies.
You find a natural way to get better, you have to pay for it yourself. The federal health insurance will not cover it. They'll cover all the surgery, all the prescription drugs, everything approved by the Food and Drug Administration, and even the director of the FDA says that the FDA is not capable of doing what the government is forcing it to do. But they have to follow the law. But the law is bad, and it's hurting everybody.
Well, Chris, I'm sorry, I don't mean to hog the show.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I've heard so much of this for so many years. That
yeah, you're lucky you. You've had access to him for years, and I know that you guys have had some pretty interesting and wonderful healing sessions together.
That's been very true for me. And, you know, as many people, many of our listeners know, I've had some chronic pain, which eventuates into migraines, and they've been becoming more severe as I've gotten older. I had a car accident when I was pretty young, and apparently got hurt more than what they thought at the time. But yeah, I tried to stay away from pain medication for a very long time, and one of the things that my dad helped with was in realizing that when you're treating pain with natural pain types of painkillers, that most people do not get addicted. When you're just medicating enough to deal with pain, and our medical culture, I guess now, is so freaked out about people getting addicted to painkillers that they often make the pain medication unavailable to those people who really need it. And it was true for me. I think I realized that when I was receiving natural, what I would consider natural opiate-based types of painkillers, that I never had any addiction problem at all. And it was because when I was not in pain, I didn't need them. And people who abuse those kinds of medications take them even when they're not in pain, and maybe take it in order to sort of dull their perspectives on reality because they're in emotional pain.
And no matter how long you've been on them for use of pain only, and only what you need for pain, you can suddenly stop and you will have no withdrawal. But if you use pain medication just because it's pleasurable, and you have to take more and more to get the same amount of pleasure, and then you quit taking it, you get very sick. You can even die during the withdrawal.
Wow. Now, so what you're saying, let me clarify. If you're taking pain medication, you say natural pain medication, opiate-based or who knows? I mean,
well,
like a derivative. Like a derivative of
endorphins. And if you take something natural that's like an endorphin, it's like something your body normally has and makes.
That would be like morphine or a codeine, something that's an opiate-based type of pain medication,
right.
Not, as opposed
right.
to the synthetic.
Right, okay.
Right, not synthetic.
And if you take that, so what you said was if you take that for your pain while you're in pain, then when the pain
yeah, only, goes away, only enough to relieve actual pain, yes.
You won't be addicted then at the end of the pain.
Right.
Like for instance, after surgery, say, you have a lot of pain after surgery, so they give you a morphine drip, and you can just push the button and get a drip of morphine. Every time the pain gets a little unbearable, then you can push that. And I've been through this several times because of my episode with cancer.
Yeah,
but
and
I never
the patient
got addicted
will use morphine. Very little pain medication that way. They take it when they need it, as soon as they need it, and it takes only a tiny amount.
Right. So I guess that's progress right there in terms of, you know, a post-surgery kind of pain relief. But how can you explain some maybe natural ways that a person can alleviate chronic pain? That, you know, they just can't get out of pain. They're in pain all the time.
Virtually all chronic conditions are nutritional. And with Dr.
Wow.
Bruce West's protocols, you can find the protocol, find the nutrients that you need. And after you've been taking them for 2 or 3 months, you begin to notice that the trouble is going away. And then you can reduce the amount. If you don't take enough of it, it'll come back. But you can find out how much you need by trial and error to supply the nutrients to keep yourself healthy.
Now, if I were to go to his website or look him up on the internet, Dr. Bruce West, could I buy some supplements from him?
Oh, yeah, he will sell them. You pay the retail.
I thought you had to be a healthcare practitioner to get them. Hello?
Did we lose your dad? I think we did. Yeah, we lost Richard. Oh, Crystalline? We just lost Crystalline too. So it's a conspiracy, folks. What can I tell you? The medical professionals are listening in. It gives me a good opportunity to mention Diane. Hold on.
Hello,
Richard,
I'm back
you?
On. Yes,
oh,
Dr.
hi.
Beek,
we lost you. I said it was a conspiracy.
Disconnected.
We lost Crystalline, too. We lost you both at the same time. There she is. Hold on.
I hear a lot of static.
Do you?
Just bumped me off the line, so.
Yeah, you know, I was just saying it had to be a conspiracy. You guys both dropped off at the same
time. Sometimes Blog Talk has a little glitch in it, and I mean, for all of the things that go right with this programming and technology, I guess we shouldn't complain when once in a while it hits a glitch.
Now you're breaking up on my phone. Now the static has stopped. Now there's still a little bit of static, but it's not as bad as it was.
Well, maybe I can try calling back in on another phone, but I had just wanted to say that I think to the answer to the question you had originally was, could you buy these supplements from him? And I think you said that you have to be a healthcare professional
yes,
to buy
but,
them directly.
Bruce West will sell them to anyone. If you go if you go online to Health Alert, then you can get medication. You can get the food supplements from him. Anyone can do that, or you can get them from any other health professional who registers with Standard Process, and the health professional will get it at half price.
If it doesn't work out, he will you know work with you. If you take one of his regimens and it doesn't work for you, you can write him and he'll help you figure out something else. Is that what you said?
Yes, if you follow his protocol and it doesn't work, you send him a letter with a self-addressed envelope with 2 stamps on it. He will respond at no charge, tell you what to try next.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to go check his site out.
You and Mom are both healthcare professionals who distribute these supplements. So,
You want to get them through me, I'd be glad to send them to you.
How could somebody contact you, Richard?
Well, you have my email address.
What is your email?
RWBIEK at juno.com. rwbeek at juno.com.
At Juno, okay. Now, you, and do you do, I assume that you would be willing to do phone consultations? I mean, you do, you obviously are willing to make house calls, which is unheard of anymore, but are you willing to do phone consultations?
I have done consultations over the phone. It doesn't work as well as being there in person. I would, if anybody contacts me by email, I can email the process to them, and you can find any other person that is a friend or somebody you trust. It doesn't, as long as you find somebody who will not take advantage of you in any way. It could be a stranger, but the idea is that you first make your list. You can do this all by yourself. Make a list of all the good stuff and think of how you can take maximum advantage of every one of the good things that are on your list. And then when you get to and using the good stuff, you should always do that first. Do everything you can do on your own. That's only sensible. But when it's not working, then you get together with somebody else and you focus on your number one concern. And I tell people, imagine a neon light in your mind's eye of a word or two that describes your concern. And you just keep focusing on that neon light. Some people like to imagine that it's flashing. But you focus on that concern. And you will then begin receiving from your own inner voice. You will get these suggestions. You may not hear any sound, but the suggestions will come to your consciousness. And you don't open your eyes. You keep your eyes closed and you stop thinking. Just focus on your concern. And when you get a suggestion, you say a word or two out loud, and your partner will write it down and make a list. And your partner, in the meantime, if they believe in prayer, they will be praying for you. If they don't believe in prayer, they just send you their good wishes so that the synergy is possible between you and that other person that makes 1 plus 1 equals 11. And when the suggestions stop coming, they do stop after a while. You may get 10, 20, 30, 40 questions, 40 suggestions, but eventually they stop coming. Then you look at the list that somebody else has written down for you, and no matter how many are on the list, you will know, everybody knows, which one is the most promising. And they usually know instantly. You look at the list and you say, which one is the most promising? And they point to one on the list, and you ask, why did you pick that? And they say, well, it's obvious. They can't give you any rationale. They just know in their heart of hearts that looks the most promising. And that's what they should do. And even if it's not the right answer, they should follow it anyway. If it works, great. They enjoy the benefit. And if it doesn't work, that is even better, because so far, in every case when that happened, the person knew exactly what step they should have taken. And they had to do the wrong thing to discover the right thing. And when they took that step, the benefit was just so great they could hardly believe it. It just seemed too good to be true. They couldn't believe it was happening to them.
Well, you know, this calls for a quote from Jesus. I think it's from paper 159, section 3, instruction for teachers and believers, a favorite section of mine. These are the words of Jesus. He says, the world is filled with hungry souls who famish in the very presence of the bread of life. Men die searching for the very God who lives within them. Men seek for the treasures of the kingdom with yearning hearts and weary feet when they are all within the immediate grasp of living faith. And I wanted to share that, Richard, because I think that's what you're saying. You know, so often we turn to the people outside of us for the answers. We turn to the doctors, we turn to the lawyers, we turn to the, the clergymen, but we don't ask ourselves. We don't go within and ask the still small voice, as Jesus is saying, you know, the world is filled with hungry souls who famish in the very presence of the bread of life. The bread of life is within you. The very God who lives within you, he says it, he describes it. And then he says, they seek for the treasures of the kingdom with yearning hearts and weary feet when all of these treasures are within their immediate grasp. You know, and that is to exercise their living faith and to believe that if they turn to the greatest source of knowledge in the universe of universes that lives within them, they'll get the answer they need. And it's so simple. It's almost too simple that people just don't believe it's possible. How could it be so simple? To follow your inner guidance. We spend a lifetime ignoring it. And it seems to take a lifetime to learn how to not ignore it. How to not only not ignore it, but to embrace it. And seek it.
One of the other areas, Dad, that you've talked a lot about and that you've been writing about for some time is about cancer specifically. And we've had some conversations about, you know, the book that you've been working on. Would you like to share some of those ideas with Paula and with our audience?
About cancer?
Right.
Well, the latest thing is capsaicin, which is the hot part of the hot red pepper. Capsaicin concentrates. There is a company called Pharmacia, Pharmacia, Pharmacia.com, that produces capsaicin capsules. And if you have cancer of any kind, you may want to try this. It's harmless, and it's very cheap. You take 7 of these Pharmacia capsaicin capsules with food on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 3 times a day with breakfast, lunch, and supper. You take 7 of these capsules. If you have trouble taking them, you should contact Pharmacia directly. They may be able to make capsules that are smaller, or it can make some other arrangement, but almost everybody can tolerate this. And if you take that 3 times a day, for 3 days a week, you will be able to kill all the cancer cells in your body, because normal blood cells and normal tissue cells will not absorb the capsaicin. But the cancer cell membrane is permeable, and it's weak, and it's thin. And the capsaicin goes in, and it destroys the mitochondria, the energy-producing units inside the cancer cell. And eventually those cancer cells will die from lack of energy. Now, this is what Dr. Rowan told me in an email, and I've been telling people about it.
Dr. Who?
It may work and it may not work, but it's cheap and it's harmless.
And you said, how did you find out about it?
I got an email from Dr. Rowan. I used to subscribe to his newsletter, but I quit paying for his newsletter, but I do get his free emails. And this is something that he told people on his email list. This was not too long ago, a month or two ago, when this happened.
I have a hard time finding pharmacia.com, and I actually spelled it wrong on the board. Sorry, friends. But how do you spell that, Richard?
How do you spell Pharmacia?
Is it P-H-A-R?
Oh, capsaicin. Capsaicin is C-A-P-S-A-I-C. capsaicin, capsaicin, A-I-C-I-N, C-A-P.
And pharmacia is P-H-A-R-M-A-C-I-A.
Right.
P-H-A-R-M-A-C-I-A.com?
Yes.
Okay.
You can get the capsaicin capsules from them. I don't know anybody else who's done it. This is something brand new to me. Rowan is the only one, Dr. Rowan's the only one I know who has publicized this.
Yeah, you know, I told a friend about capsaicin who has cancer. And he's been taking the capsaicin, and he's noticed that he feels a lot better, and his count is way down. So by 25%, he told me. So that's really good news. He can't take seven at a time, though. It burns his stomach.
Dr. Rowan said some people won't be able to tolerate that much heat. But what you do is you take what you can tolerate, and then gradually you keep increasing it. And as time goes on, you get better and better. You eventually get to the place where you can take seven capsules three times a day, three times a week.
Yeah, he has prostate cancer, and he said he's noticed it's really, he feels a lot better. So he really appreciates that advice, Richard, about capsaicin. And it makes a lot of sense. I was wondering if, you know, obviously people in Latin American countries eat a lot of natural chili peppers, and so they ingest a lot of that naturally, and I've always heard that they have way less digestive problems. I was curious if the incident of cancer is less in countries like that.
Yeah.
Is it? Do you know if there's ever been a study like that?
Has been a study stating that, the chances are we wouldn't be able to find it or read about it here. Well, one of the things Dad found out when he was in public health was that most of the research that showed the evidence that supports, you know, many of the things he's been telling us today, most of those reports get sort of silenced.
If you go online and try to find out what happens during doctor strikes, there have been many doctor strikes, especially in Israel, and the death rate always drops when doctors go on strike. Within less than 10 days, it drops. And when the strike is over, in less than 10 days, it goes back up to where it was before. So far, it's been between 17% to 60% fewer deaths during the doctor's strike, and then when the strike ends, the deaths increase 20% up to 120% back to where they were before the strike. But you go online and try to get information about doctor's strikes, you won't find it. But the morticians in Israel have had so many strikes that when the doctors go on strike, the morticians rapidly mediate an end to the strike or they go out of business.
Well, I watched a show years ago, and this is, you know, getting back to what you were saying about you realize that medicine isn't really interested in getting people better and keeping them well. It's come down to being politically correct, and obviously dollars and cents. It's big business. It's huge business. I watched a show years ago called The Politics of Cancer. Gosh, this was in the early 80s probably. And they just showed how, people who get cancer end up spending a boatload of money before they die, you know. And obviously whatever, you know, if throwing money at a thing cured it or found a cure, I get really upset when they talk about finding a cure, because they never talk about finding the cause. And for me, the way to cure something is to find what's causing it and not do that thing. Something's causing it. Something's causing the epidemic of breast cancer that we're having right now. Something's causing it. And so to throw money at a cure, it's just like saying, it's as crazy as saying, I should be able to take a magic pill and lose 50 pounds. It ain't going to happen. I know what causes overweightness, and I just need to not do that. You know what I mean? If you want to solve the problem, find what causes the problem and don't do that.
Your inner voice would tell you the next step to take in order to discover what you need to discover.
Right.
And you will discover the cause. You will discover the remedy eventually. Maybe not with the first step, but if you keep following the best suggestions coming from your inner voice, you'll get where you need to go. You'll discover your destiny.
Well, getting back to the topic of the politics of cancer, one of the things that you'll find is that cancer is big business. Raising money for research about cancer, and the money spent getting chemotherapy and getting various types of diagnostics for cancer. It's one of the biggest industries in medicine. And
well, at one time it was 7% of the gross national product. Now it's about 15%, or maybe more. It just every year it goes up higher and higher, faster than inflation, faster than the growth in the gross domestic product. So when the government takes over health care, they're taking over a major slice of the total product in the company and the country, and it's increasing every year.
What do you think about the study of genetics and stem cell research? Do you think that holds a great deal of potential?
Yes, and they've found ways of creating stem cells from existing cells, even in an adult, and that will have virtually the same flexibility as embryonic cells, so that they can do almost all the research they want to do with cells that could never become a human being.
Right, that's been just discovered in the last year, I believe. Or 2 years, and there's a lot of other genetic research that's going on that I think it sounds really promising, and I think younger doctors, people who've been through medical school more recently, are much more aware of the harm done by pharmaceutical products. You'll find that the older doctors, those who went to medical school in the 50s and 60s, are far less likely to be willing or able to change with the times and accept the food as medicine sort of theory. But I think more younger physicians are beginning to see the truth. Yeah,
well, genetics are very important when you're in the uterus and when you're first born in your early years of life. Genetics is very important. But the older you get, the less genetics has to do with what happens to you, your body and your health. Your nutrition, your attitude, your lifestyle, your belief system, everything you believe and do becomes much more important than genetics.
Hmm. So your health is more nurture than nature, huh?
As you get older,
the older you get?
Yes, that makes more of a difference. For fetuses and newborns and little children, genetics is very important. And if they have a serious genetic anomaly, it could be fatal. But the older we get, the less our genetics have to do with who we are and what we are.
There's a board on the question, Dr. Beek, on what somebody wants me to ask you if you've read anything on the surfacing research that cancer is actually a fungus, kind of like Candida. And they say that Suzanne Summers talks about this in her new book, Knockout. And it's been on Dr. Mercola, an interview with an Italian oncologist. And it's interesting. It's an interesting question because, you know, Hannah Kroger in Boulder, who was a magnificent herbologist in Boulder, always said that cancer is a fungus. So I'm wondering, have you seen anything about that?
No, I haven't. There are lots of theories about it. Dr. Budvik, Johanna Budvik, discovered that it had to do with respiration, that the respiration in cancer cells is mostly anaerobic, and it requires the fermentation of sugar in order to survive. So if you don't eat any sugar at all, you don't eat any sugar that can be fermented, the cancer cells will die. And she also found that if people took flaxseed oil that is freshly ground flaxseed oil and it's kept in a dark bottle in the refrigerator because light and oxygen will destroy the flaxseed oil. And you take something like a teaspoon full or so of flaxseed oil every day, maybe a tablespoon, I'm not sure what it was, I have to look it up. And you take cottage cheese, which is a source of sulfur that helps with the flaxseed oil. She has cured more cancer patients than anyone else in the world just by feeding them flaxseed oil and cottage cheese.
You know, when I had cancer, somebody told me to take walnut oil with cottage cheese, and she said that it's shown that it creates a natural form of interferon in the body, which is interesting. You said, but it's flax. You're saying flaxseed oil. She says flaxseed oil.
Well, both flaxseed and walnuts are very high in omega-3 fatty acids. So,
yeah,
I'm sure that would be true. But the only thing about walnuts is that they do have a toxin in their coating. And if you take a raw walnut and you soak it in salt water overnight or for like 24 hours and then dry it, that toxic surface content will dissipate. And so I think it depends how the walnut oil is processed. But I find walnut oil also very very useful for a lot of things. But one of the things my dad suggests is that, for example, with flaxseed oil, which goes rancid very quickly, is to keep whole flax, a whole flaxseed, and then just chop it up or process it like in a
coffee
grinder.
Yeah.
And chop it up and then eat it, so you're getting not only the oil but also the fiber from the flax.
And you have to eat it quickly and eat all of it in less than 10 minutes. The faster you eat it, the better it is.
Wow. Could you just sprinkle it over your cottage cheese, for instance? Do you think it would be the same thing?
Sure. We frequently sprinkle it on yogurt or blueberries and yogurt. Steve eats cottage cheese, but doesn't appeal to me. I think that I might have an allergy to sulfur.
Dr. Johanna Budvig found that the cancer cells that were using anaerobic respiration with fermented sugar, that when she fed the flaxseed oil and the cottage cheese, the cancer cells began breathing oxygen again, and they turned back into normal cells instead of being destroyed.
Oh, my gosh. So can you buy a form of flaxseed oil that you could keep refrigerated and it wouldn't go bad?
Oh, yeah. You can go to any health food store and buy flaxseed oil. It comes in a dark bottle. You just keep it refrigerated.
Someone told me Dr. Udo's oil was good, was a good oil for that. I think it was Diane LeBrec, actually, that touted Dr. Udo's oil, UDO. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
I haven't.
I've heard of Blue Ice, which is a mixture of fish oil and butter oil. Blue Ice Royal, I think it's called. It's fairly expensive, but it has what is called Factor X. Now, we don't know what Factor X is. It's probably part of the vitamin K complex. But the butter oil and the fish oil has natural vitamin A complex, vitamin D complex, and the X factor. It's now available in capsules. They sold it as an oil before, but now some people didn't like the taste of it, so they put it in capsules. You can take one or two capsules with a meal every day and get all the omega-3 and factor X that you need, and vitamin A and vitamin D.
The nice thing about these oils that are high in omega-3s is they're really good for your skin, and they're good for your joints, and they're good for a whole variety of other things as well.
Well, one of the best things for your skin is gelatin. You can get Knox gelatin that's unflavored, undyed, and you take a teaspoonful of Knox gelatin every day. You can mix it with your food or in a drink. And your skin will be thicker and more moist. Also, your nails and hair will be stronger.
Oh.
And there's also some new information out. It might not actually be that new, but some valid information out about both eating and putting on your skin organic virgin coconut oil. Can you talk a little bit about what that does and how that affects your liver, Dad?
Well, coconut oil is rapidly absorbed without any digestion. It will go through your skin. It will go through your intestine, and it is immediately taken to the liver. None of the other cells in the body can use coconut oil. But the liver will take it and turn it into energy, burn it for energy. It never goes into any fat cells. So you can have all the coconut oil you want, and it will not make any fat cell bigger, or will not create any new fat cells in your body.
And it
will raise your metabolic rate. You will burn off more energy. You will burn off more fat because the liver will raise the body temperature slightly.
And it's also very good for your skin. And
it's great for the skin, yes.
We started using that, and we went to an event not too long ago where Steve saw some of his friends, and they said, "Wow, you look so much younger. You really look better. What have you been doing?" And he said, "Well, I've been putting coconut oil on my face." And he started using coconut oil as a moisturizer. And it's, you know, he's had a very rugged, lined face, heavily lined face, because he's so fair-skinned and has spent so much time in the outdoors fishing and hunting and working as a carpenter. And it's really made a difference on his skin. I mean, I find it really noticeable.
it's probably best to get organic extra virgin coconut oil, which is a little more expensive, but it's probably healthier.
And it's not that expensive if you buy it in the largest bulk size.
Yeah.
Oh, we just had somebody on the list say coconut is also antifungal and so good for candida. So that's interesting. Yeah. You know,
they used to use coconut oil in theaters to pop popcorn. It was great. And then the Food and Drug Administration forced them to stop using coconut oil because it's a saturated fat. And the medical profession thought all saturated fat was harmful, so they took it off the market. But it was actually better. It's far better for popcorn than any other oil from a health standpoint.
Certainly better than a trans fat or that they went to.
Yes.
Boy, and haven't they learned a lot about saturated fats lately? I mean, it's interesting how, you know, when I was a kid, eggs were bad. And now they've decided, well, hey, you know, eggs aren't that bad. And I know, Richard, that you have said that eggs are actually a very good food for you.
They're the most perfect food, and they should be eaten raw if possible. If you get organic eggs, they're virtually free of salmonella. When antibiotics are used in raising chickens that lay eggs, sometimes they have salmonella inside the egg. If you want to take double precautions, you can take some turmeric with the raw egg. The turmeric will kill any salmonella that's in the egg. But the raw egg is a virtually perfect food.
And if you cook it very slightly, you know, you really lightly poach it or lightly saute it, and then, you know, eat it when it's really soft too, that'll help. But I wanted you to share with the listeners one of the things that you were able to do to turn around the death rate of young children in Africa.
Before we had a measles vaccine, and before I knew that measles were connected with diarrhea in 2 and 3 year old children, we had 22 deaths a month of 2 and 3 year old children who came into hospital with diarrhea. And there's nothing we could do to save them. We gave them a magnesium sulfate injection and maybe saved a life here and there, but almost all of them died anyway. I discovered that it was probably from a protein deficiency. And when they got measles, I didn't realize, but a doctor in Accra suggested that maybe the digestive system doesn't work because the intestines get a rash just like the skin. And so for several days, if they ate protein, which they had to have to survive, and the reason they got the diarrhea was because they were low on protein, when the protein got into the intestine, it would putrefy. It would not be digested because the intestinal lining was sick with measles. And if they ate the protein, it would even make the diarrhea worse. So since we didn't have the vaccine, I figured what we have to do is get every child, 2 and 3 year old, to get more protein, meat, milk, fish, or egg. Well, it turned out that the egg was the only practical source of protein. They couldn't afford the other sources. And so I said, why don't you give the 2 and 3 year old children one egg a day? And the mother said, oh, no, we can't do that. They'll turn into thieves. And I thought, what a silly superstition. But it's true. 2 and 3 year olds who are healthy are all thieves. Everything they see is mine, mine, mine. So I said, well, how about
And they're also very, very active
and
troublesome.
And so I said, how about 3 eggs a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday? No, they'll still be thieves. How about 1 egg a week on Sunday? Every Sunday, give 2 and 3 year olds an egg. And the women hesitated, and so I said, well, never mind. And I went to see the Queen Mother, and I asked her to ask the women to give every 2 and 3 year old child 1 egg every Sunday.
Well, first explain to her who the Queen Mother is.
Queen Mother was in charge of all the women. The men answered to the chief, but the women answered to the Queen Mother. And actually,
and the Queen Mother is the chief's mother, right?
And the no, not the chief's mother. She's just the head woman in the community. And if the chief is not good, people begin complaining that the chief is not making good decisions, which are supposed to be reached by consensus. But if the chief started becoming too powerful and telling people do this and don't do that, the Queen Mother had the power to discharge that chief and get a new chief. So she was really the most powerful person in the town. And so she told the women that she wanted them to give one egg a week to 2 and 3 year old children. And within 6 weeks, the deaths dropped from 22 a month down to 2 a month. And the ones who died were people from outlying areas who didn't know about the egg a week. So it was 100% successful within the community. And this started the run on eggs. After I left Ghana, the price of eggs shot way up. So now they can't even afford to feed 2 and 3 year old children an egg. But they're giving them beans. One of the women that I trained in the school, the nursing school, one of the nurses hit on using beans. Well, beans are very cheap and very common, and apparently they have enough protein to keep the children safe. Of course, now they have the measles vaccine, so they don't die from measles, but they could still die from some other infection if they're low on protein.
Now, you said it was measles that was killing the children?
Yeah, the measles caused a rash that was not just on the skin but on the surfaces throughout the body, and the intestinal linings were sick with the measles, and the digestion just didn't work for a few days. And whatever the kid would eat would not be digested, and that would just increase the diarrhea. And if you starve them, they'd die, and if you give them food, they'd die. There was just no way we could save them from dying from the diarrhea.
You know, I have to think about right now on the board, you know, we have several people talking about their chickens, and they raise chickens and chicken broth, and that, you know, somebody said that and natural antibiotics are often in chicken droppings. And when I was a kid, my mom, if I got sick, would give me a soft-boiled egg. So, you know, it's just interesting. Or your grandmother would make you chicken soup, you know. It's just interesting that, you know, some of these old remedies that I don't know where they came from. Were they passed down through the ages? And
well, they're empirical based on trial and error.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of the oldest remedies are the best, because they've been used successfully for so long just by trial and error.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it just goes to show, doesn't it, that, you know, again, and it's what you've been saying this whole show. You know, we can go.
Well, I
we
would
can
say
do
any,
so
any remedy that is less than 50 years old would probably be too dangerous. You'd become a guinea pig by using it. But if it's still widely used and it's more than 50 years old, it's probably a good thing.
My daughter always likes to tell the story about when she got very sick with bronchitis. It was a terrible chest congestion that she had and a horrible cough that she couldn't get over. And I called my mom. I was distraught. And my mom was really big on old remedies. I mean, she just always... And interestingly, my mom survived smallpox, measles, mumps, rubella. She had almost every single childhood disease, not polio, but I mean, so she was really big on these home remedies, and obviously her mother was too, and that's how her mother was able to nurse her through all of these terrible childhood illnesses, and which we vaccinate against now. But She told me to make a mustard plaster, and she told me how to do it, and I did it. And it did break up my daughter's, chest problem. It did clear up all of the congestion and everything, but it burned her skin. So I did something wrong. I don't know. I made it too strong, I guess. She always curses me for making her a mustard plaster that was too strong. But, you know, and I guess there's danger in that. You got to know exactly how to do this stuff. Still, you know, and another great old remedy that Brigitte Mars, who is a raw foodist here in Boulder, a Urantia book reader who touts raw food, she told me about putting castor oil on a soft cloth, like felt, not felt but flannel, and putting it over the affected area, in my case where my ovary, my ovarian cancer was, and that the castor oil will draw out. It will actually go in and draw out any sickness. And it comes from the castor oil plant is a green leaf with a red dot in the middle, and it means palm of Christ. And that castor oil is very healing as well. So, again, you know, these old remedies can be really amazing.
And fever is a very good thing to improve your immunity. Unfortunately, in most medical circles, when somebody gets a fever, they try to bring it down with aspirin or with cold packs or something. And it's really the way to improve immunity. In fact, 100% of cancers can be cured if you create an artificial fever that is high enough to kill the cancer but not high enough to kill normal cells. And there are 4 places in Germany that are certified to provide this fever therapy. And they very carefully control the temperature. I don't know how, for several hours, I don't know how long they have to keep it at the temperature that's lethal for cancer, but they are able to cure any cancer simply by controlling temperature. And if you have a wound that's infected and you apply heat to it, it will heal a lot faster.
Amazing.
I've often
Go ahead, Crystal.
I've often tried that when I've had a cold or the flu, where I've put a thermometer in my mouth and gotten in a bathtub, and it's really hard to keep the water hot enough because it cools off naturally. But even getting my temperature up to 100 or 101, I will feel much better immediately following that treatment. But I notice, you know, maybe six or 7 hours later, that I'll start to feel it again. And if I go back in and again try to get my temperature up, that it helps me feel better immediately.
Keep running hot water into the tub and you have a thermometer in your mouth and it can tolerate it, you can go up to 103 or 104 degrees. That's not harmful at all, and it will help the immune system. The main thing to remember is that if you do get into a hot bath like that, when you get out of the bathtub, you should have somebody else help you, because
you get really
when
dizzy.
You stand up, your blood pressure will drop and you may pass out and hit your head when you fall. Or you can just
drain
the water
out
of the tub and stay in the tub until your body cools down enough that you can stand up safely.
Paula just said we're out of time.
Can you believe it? We have 1 minute. But Richard, thank you so much for coming on today. It was just a blast to talk to you. You are so knowledgeable and just a wealth of information, and I appreciate it a great deal.
Just remember, you're the greatest expert on your own life and health, and that all advice is harmful. discover your own truths from your own inner voice.
Well, thanks, Dad, for coming on our show, and thank you, our listeners, for being with us, and Have a wonderful week. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you. I love you too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paula.
And you bet, honey. And quickly, next week, we're going to have Don Ware on. He's one of the foremost experts on UFOs in the United States, maybe even in the world, a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. So tune in for that one, folks. It should be a lot of fun. And thanks for joining us today. Thank you, my dear friend, Crystal, and I hope you have a great week. And
thank you.
We'll be back next week with the
All right.
Citizen.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book, so all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.